Mahaloni. Kia rana. Warm Pacific greetings all. To all our listeners, we've been going strong consistently since 2009. Yes, 2009. Every Tuesdays, 11:35 a.m. on 104.6 FM in Auckland, or stream live online anywhere on planetaudio.org.nz. Te Ama Pacifica Health Radio showcases Pacifica leaders and leadership stories, which share the vast knowledge and experience on how Pacific peoples can have a better understanding and knowledge around health and well-being in Aotearoa, New Zealand. And Pacific Island nations in the South Pacific, utilizing the diversity and wide range of Pacifica peoples, the personal and professional backgrounds of these leaders, exposing their struggles and triumphs in living the Kiwi dream, the reason their ancestors came to the land of milk and honey, and the learning from their journeys. Subject matter includes physical health, mental health, suicide prevention, depression, spiritual health, budgeting, financial literacy, health literacy, management, housing, employment, child and welfare services, services for pregnant women and children, education, problem gambling, police, Justice Department, sports, alcohol and drug services, SIFs, and all facets of life that impact on Pacific peoples. In my mind, with anyone listening in to Te Ama at the heart of what we do, it's about equity. How do we provide solutions and become sustainable, thrive? So, today I am excited about my guest today. His name is Hamish Crooks, who is currently the Chief Executive of Pacific Home Care. Now, Pacific Home Care provides home-based health care throughout the Auckland region to the disabled and the elderly community who wish to stay living at home, but who need assistance. So we strive to be the best at serving the community. We strive to serve all clients with love, care, and professionalism. So in the next hour, we'll be touching more in depth at who and what the Pacific Home Care Organization is all about. We will also have a talanoa around the approach and values Pacific Home Care take and carry with our work in the community. Now, a brief snapshot on my guest, Hamish. Hamish has worked and still works in the public and community realm for the past 30 years, almost before I was born. And I have had the pleasure of meeting him in person over the last few weeks. And it is a blessing. You know, for me, it's a privilege to work under Hamish and Louise's guidance and leadership at PHC. Very thankful. Everything happens for a reason. Good things happen to good people. So to start off, I'd like for our listeners out there tuning in over the airwaves and online, nationwide, Pacific, Australia, anywhere, I'd really like to get my guest here, Hamish, to introduce himself and share with us a bit, well, a lot of who he is before we get into what he does. So once again, kia rana, Hamish, bea koe.
Kia rana, Mel, and tolofalava, nisambula vanaka, malo lalei, whakalofalai atu, malo ni, taloha ni, And greetings to all of our guests. Kia ora koutou katoa e te romata e te atua. Yes, it's me, Hamish Crooks. I always say Hamish is a very good Cook Island name, but if you want a translation in Samoan and Tongan, it means Samese. It's the Scottish Gaelic word for James. And I've been around and working in our community for many, many years. And the last 9 years I've been particularly working in Pacific Home Care. And I hail originally, born and bred in the lovely, amazing 16th island of the Cook Islands, a place called Tokoroa in the middle of the North Island. Not too far from some of Mel's cousins and that down in Rotorua.
Right of Aegis.
And Taupo, where all the Tokelauans went to work in the forestry. All the Cook Islanders, they went to Tokoroa, the Atutakians and the Mangaians particularly, way back in the 50s and 60s. And that's where I was born and lived in Tokoroa for quite some number of years. But I've lived in Otara in South Auckland for the last 22 years, serving Auckland communities, particularly in different areas. So that's a little bit about who I am and what I do.
Beauty, Hamish. Hamish, if I can cut in there, tell us, growing up in Tokoroa, where there are a lot of Cook Islanders, you know, migrated from the islands to work there. Can you share with us growing up in Tokoroa?
Yeah, I guess Tokoroa is one of those places where everybody knows everyone. It's just like a small village. It was a growing village when we were growing up. And then later on, with, you know, the changes in the world economies and that, forestry sort of got sold out and to different other players and that. And so then Tokoroa started to lose population, I guess. But mostly the people there are just simply lovely. Growing up, very multicultural, because you had many different ethnic groups, Scottish, Dutch, German, English, Cook Island, and in the Cook Islands, Atutakians, Mangaians, Manahiki, all of those particular islands, Rarotongans. And then you had the Samoans, some Tongans, and the famous Fijian families we like to talk about, the Little Brothers.
Oh, Walter
and the
Little.
Campbells, the Campbells from Fiji. And so everyone knew everyone. We all played down the same streets. All the parents told us off because we were like their children. And so very much a rich community. And, you know, there were no fences in those days, so you ran across everybody's property. And we used to get up to mischief together with all our brothers and sisters of all different ethnics. So I think that was a really rich growing up in Tokoroa, and that sort of set a foundation for a future of service.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Hamish, just share with us briefly high school. Your high school.
High school. Well, high school in those days was a little bit traditional because, you know, in New Zealand, you know, we fail 50% of all of our students at school C. Yeah, and, you know, so when you're in the third form, there's plenty of us Māori and Island children. Only trouble is we were invading the bottom end of the academic learning. When you... You know, going through high school, quite challenging.
Yes.
You know, in those days, we didn't quite have the support because a lot of our parents didn't understand the English system that well. However, out of all my brothers and sisters who did and have done quite well, I was the one who got to the seventh form. Not showing off there, guys, but I did. And then I went on to university, to Otago University to finish my commerce degree. When I got to the seventh form, there was only me. as the island boy, and a Māori mate of mine, Richard Jeffries. We're still good mates today, and out of a class of about 20. So by the time you get to the seventh form, there's only about 20 kids left out of the 330 that started. So very different in those days. Today, there's a lot more inclusion and a lot more opportunities for our students, which I encourage all the way.
You know, you just with what you shared there, you made it right through, right up till seventh form. How was it that you were able to stay there that long?
Oh, I think, you know, the cool thing is we had some really, a lot of Cook Island mothers who were teachers at primary school, and, you know, Mama Poko Morgan, Mama Puruku Hall, Mama Mi'i Tiokatai, they were all in the school system somewhere along the line. But when we were about 15, they decided to start up what they called was a coffee evening for all of us Pacific students. Yes. But really, coffee evening was just a disguise for study skills. Okay, so they encouraged us all. They were just supporting us. And so we were able to be encouraged to keep going. And if we didn't, we took up different vocations. Some became painters, builders, mechanics, nurses, all of those kinds of things. It's just that I was the weirdo becoming a academic in terms of heading into accounting and pursuing that career.
Hamish, who were some mentors or people that influenced you at that particular age, you know, while you were at high school? Because that's a very, a vulnerable time in anyone's life. You know, you could go either way, you know. So who were some people or individuals that helped influence your choices?
Yeah, ultimately, my number one mentor was my mum. You know, she came from, born in Arorangi in Rarotonga. Her grandfather is from Iverua in Mangaia. He also set the trend. He came out in World War I as part of the 500 soldiers that fought with the Māori Battalion. So he travelled to New Zealand and on to Egypt and Sinai. And then my grandmother, who he met and married after World War I, is from Vaipai. Vaipai in Atitaki, as we all know, is the Hollywood of the Cook Islands.
Paradise.
Yeah. So I have both a show-off side of me and a stubborn Mangaian side of me, you know. So those are the things that we inherited. But my mum would be the number one mentor, plus all those mamas that I mentioned. Yes. And then the Orometuas in Tokoroa, Papa Tau Puperi, was one of my early mentors when I came out after varsity. He showed me how to work in the monks community and how to challenge some of those areas. And then Papa Bill Cuthers, and then there are other elders in the church that were always in the background supporting and encouraging.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
Thank you, Hamish. And what made you focus there on you decided to go to uni and you wanted to focus on a Bachelor of Commerce?
Yeah.
What was the thinking behind there at the time?
Oh, I think, to be honest, I was from high school, probably being in the top streams. What I was really good at was maths. And maths comes very natural to our family. All my brothers and sisters are good at maths. My mother's good at maths. And so it sort of was just a natural gift, if I could say that. But it didn't take much to study it harder and then become good at it in accounting. So the accounting side was me. I wanted to make millions and millions of dollars. So, you know, that young thing's all going to go out there and make lots of money. But ultimately, you still got to do the yards. And then accounting became my biggest barrier, actually, because I realized I wasn't that flash at it, but I was a stubborn Mangaian descent. So I kept at it and until I passed it. And then once you get past it, then apply it in practice. So, yeah.
But then before you got into the workforce, from what I understand, you went over to the States.
Oh, no, that was later, Mal. I worked as a management accountant for New Zealand Forest Products for several years. And looked after the milling division for a little while. Then I sensed God's calling on my life. In that, while I was an accountant, I was working with youth through Te Hauora, which was a Youth for Christ work amongst Māori and Pacific kids. Particularly kids who were getting into trouble and things like that. So I was giving back that way. And as I pursued my love of working in community, I sensed I needed to do my postgraduate at a Christian university in Philadelphia called Eastern University. And I did my MBA in economic development, working in third world and poor countries, because I felt that that was the sense of direction that I needed to take. I actually thought I was going to end up on the mission field, and I did. It just happened to be in Otara.
Okay, so you actually moved to the States and studied there?
Yeah, for 3 years in Philadelphia. And so again, you know, do your studies, work to pay the bills, and make sure you get through it. None of these scholarships that a lot of these fellas want these days, you know, just saying.
Absolutely.
Do the mahi.
You know, and you touched on your experience, the American culture. Yeah. You know, so how was it for you, that 3 years living in the States, in Philly, Philadelphia?
I think in many respects the American culture is different, you know, and like New Zealand, you get both good and bad. And I think the main thing, it was very Western, very materialistic, I think is probably another way of saying it. And you see that here in New Zealand today. And I think the other thing, though, is that you meet some wonderful people there. And in my course, a lot of the students were actually from third world and poor countries as well, from Kenya, from South Africa, from Ghana, from China, Germany, Canada, and particularly Canada, the native indigenous people there. So we had a really good mix of internationals and then the local Americans, and I think that's the challenge. I really enjoyed the education there because it was much more intimate, if I could say that, much more smaller classrooms, more participation, and I liked the way the Americans get you to challenge things a little bit better than here in New Zealand and bring your thinking to the table. Out there, though, when you're working in pretty challenging places like North Philadelphia. Cross-culturally, it can be challenging, particularly with African-Americans and Latinos. And I did some work with a Latino outfit to help them improve their organization. A lot of HIV back in those days, but mostly from drugs, not from...
Sharing needles.
And so really it's about helping people to help themselves and to break those cycles. And so we were there for a very short time, helping them to look at their leadership challenge and how does that impact on their communities. So, yeah, wonderful experiences and to be able to get the opportunity to work alongside of that for at least a little bit of time.
Did you find it for yourself personally like a big culture shock, you know, dealing with those African-Americans, Latinos?
Yeah, I think the little things that you sort of remember is like walking in to do an interview with a local employer who was employing African-Americans or Latinos, and the first thing you come across is that you've got to buzz yourself in through the door. The second thing is that all of the windows are bulletproof. And then you've got to put all your questionnaires through, you know, under the screens because there's no personal contact. And then you get the comment like, hey, you're not from around here. If I was you, I'd get in your car and go home because you can get killed for $20 out there on the street. And You know, and I think those are the kinds of things. But us Kiwis, we tend to, you know, tend to ignore it, you know, because we feel confident in ourselves. And I guess there's a point where you need to be safe, but also there's a point where you also need to go and experience the real things. And so, yeah, it's just a matter of attitude, I guess.
Wow. Trying to process that. Okay. Okay, Hamish. okay, so that's amazing. You completed your studies, you know, in a whole different environment. What did you get up to after that, Hamish?
Well, my sense of calling was back to New Zealand rather than to Africa or Asia. And I have been involved in a missionary work in Asia for the last 30 years as well. So I sort of have that to one side, supporting my friends who are doing that work and rescuing children out of poverty and again, giving them education and giving them a future. And so I quite enjoy that element. But God's calling on me was really back to New Zealand. Okay. And I, you know, felt that all of the gifts and the strengths that I'd built up was going to be applied to working with our own families, our own communities, who also have their own journeys, you know, in life. And so I think, for me, that was South Auckland. So I came back and I got a job pretty much straight off the plane, working back in the Ministry of Pacific Island Affairs. And back in 97, I believe, or 98, I became the regional manager for the Ministry of Pacific Island Affairs here in Auckland, leading a team consulting and developing community action plans. And so had some great consultations, some great people working alongside of me, including your auntie Hina there, Mel, but I'm showing my age now.
It's amazing. Can you share with us some of the, you know, some of the highlights you had being working at the Ministry of Pacific Island Affairs?
Yeah. Before I went to the US, I was actually working with the ministry before I left to the US, but based in Tokoroa. And one of the things that I, part of my job is I did a secondment down in the Prime Minister's office, working in the Employment Task Force. So that would have been back in 93, 94.
So you did a what there?
A secondment, or just a short assignment.
Oh, okay.
Maybe about 6 months. And, okay. And that was really about, so out of that came initiatives called the Waka'o Strategy. And for the ministry, and that was the beginning of translating a lot of initiatives into the Pacific, such as early childhood centres. One of my mentors at the time was Mama Puko Morgan, who was also involved with a Samoan elder, Mama Robertson from Porirua, and they set up the Ango Matas and the Pacific early childhood, the beginning part of that. And so when I came back after working with the ministry again, I, in the community consultations, the same issues as the growth of early childhood centres and as a strategy. There's a lot of different initiatives that, you know, as you know in community action, some things grab fire and they really develop, and others sort of just die slowly and don't really go anywhere, but they'll come back later. And so a lot of initiatives really resonate with leadership in the community, and you know the ones that'll go ahead because it'll have the momentum of the people, and that's the way it should be. Where you just got maybe the odd person advocating, it doesn't tend to catch fire. But where you have, like, the early childhood movement really grabbed fire, and I think that's still on its journey as well. It's just it grew back then, but it's much bigger today. But in the future, it'll be even bigger as we see a renaissance of our culture and our languages being rediscovered in those punangas and those angoamatas and all of those Early Childhood Centre. So that's one thing, very proud of supporting our leaders in those fields to be able to achieve that. That's just one example, huh?
Beautiful. Okay, and so obviously you threw your hat into the community and the public sector, is that correct?
Yes, correct. And then I left the public sector to set up my own company.
Yes.
Then I assisted government agencies, the Ministry of Health, the Department of Internal Affairs, to then go back to help our communities. So I worked up and down the country from Invercargill to Whangarei with a team of workers to assist our community groups to develop stronger organisations, you know. So whether they be Samoan or Tongan or Cook Island or Pan Pacific, we sort of pretty much did that for about the next 10 years.
So this company you set up, it was a consulting company?
Yes, yes. You know, I don't like saying consulting, eh? Because, you know, it's not a nice word. But it's accurate, though, because it is about talking with people, connecting people, and making sure that they're getting on with their, you know, their visions, their missions, their goals that they want to achieve. So, yeah, that's
And you did that for the next 10 years?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And we did some pretty good work during that time, and then that's what led me to Pacific Home Care.
Yes.
And Pacific Home Care was one of those groups. And as you know, some of our community organisations really struggle for funding or they struggle with managing it. And a lot of it tends to be at the governance and the management levels. The workers tend to know what to do and get on with it, but they're reliant on the leaders to make sure things happen. And so Pacific Home Care Trust was one of the papas. He was the chair, Pastor Pukirua Parai. He come and knocked on my door three times, and twice I turned him down. But the third time I realised that, you know, they were struggling. And so I went in, and that's how I went in to help Pacific Home Care get organised.
Absolutely. Hamish, for some of our listeners out there that who may not be familiar with what Pacific Home Care do, can you share with us, please?
Yeah. So Pacific Home Care, it's been around for 30 years, actually. Legally since 1991, informally, as you know, most community groups start before their legal registration. So they've been around since 1989. And again, started by two Cook Island mamas, Mama P and Mama Matarena. Both used to be health workers in the Cook Island Hospital. And when they left here, they came to New Zealand. And then through church and through community, they started up looking after elderly at a volunteer, in the volunteer road. The name of the trust was originally called the Kukiarani Arongopakari Trust, which basically means looking after the elderly. And so that's where they started. So the services was delivering home care services in the homes of elderly that were referred by the DHB or the Ministry of Health.
Yes.
It works mainly in the county's Manukau area. So sorry for those who are in Auckland, DHB or Waitakere, or even in other DHBs who would love to have a service like that. But our beginnings and where we're at is predominantly in county's Manukau, DHB for the elderly. For disability, we stretch wider into Auckland, so that's not so bad. And so fundamentally, it's sending people into homes. They do services such as personal care, could be showering, could be changing beds, could be moving them through hoists, you know. It can be toileting. It can be peg changes for bags. So that's more complex. And then they also do household management. and that can be anything from, you know, washing through to cleaning kitchens and that, just for the clients who are on their own or just a couple because they're not able to get to those tasks anymore because of their health conditions.
Yes. Yeah.
And so that's really what we do. And then also Pacific Home Care, when I first came in, we started to have those conversations with our customers about what are other services. And what we notice is that many of them are quite isolated and lonely. Even though we talk about our big families, you can still have working sons and daughters, grandchildren at school, great-grandchildren, et cetera, at punangas. So, you know, there's still this loneliness, and church sort of went some way to do that, but generally that was tended to be on a Sunday. And so what we created was a drop-in centre for elderly. We call it Fiola, and out East Auckland we call it Metro Pakari. And so we have about maybe 125 elders participating in those programs, and they come in for their day. What we found is ethnic specific.
Yes.
So they revert back to their language, their first language, as they get older. And that's pretty cool because you come into each of those programs or those services, and you just really sense the joy, the connection, the fellowship, the love that they share for each other. And so, you know, I think that's really important. And then we have one other service that we've developed over the last 5 years, thanks to a partnership with Pacifica Futures Limited. It's the Whānau Ora Services. So we serve about 550 families and who are vulnerable families in South Auckland, particularly, and East. And then we also support the Pacifica Whenua, which is the LGBTQI community. Again, a community that struggles at times for just recognition.
Acceptance.
Yeah, acceptance.
They're all part of our community,
yes, you know? And they're part of our families.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, you know, and so then that brings us back to the core of our values and who are we and how do we express ourselves as Pacific people. And so we very much keep those at the forefront of who we are and all that we do. I guess with Pacific Home Care, our vision is quite simply is to, you know, healthier communities by creating a quality of life, a better quality of life. Because sometimes I think with elderly, it's not around necessarily trying to get everyone health always improving. It's about maintaining a good quality where they can do the things that they want to do. And and I think our point of difference is through our mission is we can do that in a culturally appropriate way, being very respectful.
Absolutely.
And how we connect that. So one thing about our service is, you know, that for those customers who can access it or clients who can access it, we can deliver a high-quality healthcare service in the homes where they're getting support with their families as well as us. And also it comes, for a better word, with a lot of love and a lot of care, our values. We can place a Samoan-speaking, health-qualified care worker into a Samoan house. Who, you know, as a culture and connection and relationship becomes a real important thing. Absolutely. But we're also respectful because sometimes a Samoan don't want a Samoan or a Cook Islander doesn't want a Cook Islander because they prefer someone neutral. And so those people who are neutral are still got to take in the same values, the same love and the care and the professionalism that we sort of basically ingrain into our support workers to ensure that they will train them to make sure they have those values. Yeah,
absolutely, Hamish. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm just noticing time is, we only got a few minutes left.
Yep.
Hamish, And I know we'll have plenty of time in the future to have these discussions. You've been in the, you've worked in communities serving our people, Pacific people and mainstream as well. What do you hope to achieve in the future? What are your goals? What do you hope the direction, with the line of work that Pacific Home Care do and provide, especially for our mamas and papas, our people with disability, what direction do you hope to see?
Well, we know that everyone's living longer. That's the truth. Our ages are getting longer, but we're living with more health conditions. So we really got to look after ourselves, and we've got to make sure that we maintain a good quality of health in order to maintain a good quality of life.
Yes.
I guess for me, cross-culturally, I'd like to see, because I'm New Zealand born, I'd like to see, I'm a Kiwi of Cook Island descendants. Yes, I got a Scottish background as well. But also, I'd like to see other Kiwis sort of, look after, the ability for us to look after each other better. And I just feel with Pacific are not being looked after, and this is what can improve in New Zealand society. And probably I'll leave it at that, Mel, because I think that's a challenge for all of us, is how do we help our brothers and sisters to look after us, and how do we look after them? Because our Pākehā brothers and sisters and that are getting older, but the workforce is getting browner.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a whole different topic we can spend a lot of time on. Ooh. Hamish? Yeah, that's so true. You've really touched on some deep underlying challenges there. One thing I wanted to ask you, I've got a whole heap of questions here. Mm. Workforce development.
Yeah.
What? And I know you've mentioned that you have hundreds of staff to look over, and
yeah,
that really has to do. That can do anyone's head, having that type of responsibility.
Sure.
What are your expectations of your staff, especially in this line of work? Because it's not the type of work where you can just, clock in at 8 and clock out.
Every staff member is a real person. They all come with real stories. They come with real issues and real backgrounds. And so one of the things, and I'll use an accounting term, our number one asset is our staff. So we have to look after them and empower them, because they're the ones who are looking after our customers, our elderly. It's not me walking into that home changing an adult diaper. It's my staff member. And I described it when I first came into Pacific Home Care, and it's one of the things that I sort of fell in love with the work, and in that sense of calling again, was the vision was, the work, our workers were taking in flowers into the homes every day to our elderly, to our people with disabilities, but the flowers were their services. And so in our building, our offices, we name all of our rooms after Pacific flowers, Rangipani,
yes.
Tuwila, Kaosi, Tangamothia, and so on, because I think that's really important around, describing our workforce. And we invest into them to empower them. So we will provide them with all the training and the skills and the qualifications that they need to do the work. However, they're real. They've got families. They've got their own challenges in their life. And so you have to work with that. And looking after your staff probably takes up most of your time, because they're the most important people, because they do that work day in, day out. And so that's the values that we exchange amongst ourselves. Sometimes you have mature conversations because you need to have mature conversations. And sometimes when a worker lets down our client, we have to communicate it back with respect. So, yes, definitely the workforce is probably where we put a lot of our time and energy working alongside of them to assist them. And there's the workers in the office as well, just pretty amazing. And, you know, sometimes I feel, you know, they get the blunt end of the stick sometimes. So, you know, and the other thing is that, and we were talking about this earlier, Mel, is, you know, in our line of work, you know, you're going to have a lot of our clients pass away. And just in the last week, we've had two, possibly three, I think. And that's quite hard for some of the support workers, you know, because they've built relationships with those particular clients. But we're mindful and respectful about the families and the dignity and the grace in which we do that. And I can give you stories after stories about how we express our dignity and our grace because we celebrate their lives, even though it's a difficult time for families to let go. Okay.
Mahalo, Hamish. Thank you so much for, you know, for your words of wisdom and sharing your journey with us and, you know, with the role you're in, having the, you know, the demeanour and experience to navigate your way through these challenges that you're in. But I'm looking forward to bringing you in the next few weeks. Hopefully your schedule is, permitting of it. Any final words, Hamish?
I will finish with that, probably that quote. So in life's journey, you're always learning wise words from others. And one of the things that it stayed with me in my career is it's a Manahiki poet who said these words. E akomanoko e te atua, e tuatua e te atua, e anga anga no te atua. And the translation is simply, think of God, speak of God, and work for God. And so those are the three words that are constantly with me, is the thinking that needs to go on. The things that we think about, our imagination, our thoughts, are really important. And then we talk about those. We take those thoughts and we translate it through words. And then we turn those words into actions. And that's the work that we do. And I think, you know, it's a work of service. It's a work of commitment to one another. And so I'm always mindful of those words, Mel, and it's something that I've carried through many, many years. Me taki mata. Ia ki manui.
Thank you very much, Hamish, and that's us for today. Just want to thank you all for tuning in, and once again, thank you so much, Hamish, for taking the time to come and share with our listeners. Me taki mata.
Do that. rise.